Is he the offensive guru or the defensive?
Offensive coordinator.
Okay, you're on. All right. Morning. We're back on the 12th floor of the State Capitol for the admin portion of the North Dakota Public Service Commission's meeting. I call this portion of the meeting to order. Okay, we have on the admin agenda a couple items of consent, and I move passage of those items.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Congratulations, Conrad. You're officially hired.
That was a freebie, Conrad.
Freebie. Didn't work out.
Say, can I borrow your agenda? I am looking at the various agendas. So I misplaced mine. Okay, there's a few items that are on the discussion matters, and there's two items before the Dakota Access, and I'd like to, if it's okay with my colleagues, just bump those down to after. Sure. After the Dakota Access conversation. Okay, so as has been reported, and as we have seen in our filings, the there was an unanticipated discovery during construction of the Dakota Access pipeline. That became, and I just want to run through the timeline on this. This is the first time the three of us have had a chance since this happened to really discuss it. So I kind of want to run through how that all happened. This is my portfolio, so I've been kind of overseeing this since last week when we discovered it, and some options that I think we can consider in terms of action items. So on October 25th, we received a report from our third-party construction inspector. It actually arrived almost at the end of the day, like 4:45 on Monday evening. It was docketed. I became aware of it on Tuesday morning, October 25th, so a week ago, a little more than a week ago. And this report basically was from K2, our third-party construction inspector, and they said they had come across an unanticipated discovery while they were what appeared to be an unanticipated discovery while they were out monitoring the route. They talked to the company's environmental inspector, who informed them that the unanticipated discovery was found on or around October 15th, and that resulted in a reroute that was approved. It appears that the project is following their unanticipated discovery plan. This is quoting from the report, and communicated with K2 that project archaeologists are working with North Dakota SHPO. At the time of the inspection, October 20th, K2 did not find any dockets filed with the PSC in reference to the reroute, but they said it's possible those documents had been filed but not made publicly available. So we got that. We had not received any documentation. This was the first notice that we received about this find. So on that same day, then we communicated to the company, we need an explanation of this. What did you find? What did you do? Who approved your work? How did you coordinate with the SHPO? What has the SHPO said? All of these types of questions we provided to the company, and they replied back then to us on October 27th. And the information that they filed with the commission basically explains their coordination with the SHPO. It provided the SHPO concurrence with what they were doing. It showed how they delineated the impacted area. It provided pictures of what was found. It showed the reroute, and it provided some explanation of what the finds were in terms of their historic significance. And then I proceeded to have additional conversations directly with the SHPO to get more information about the finds, and you know, how they would characterize them. Four cairns, they're rock formations. You've probably seen the pictures of these, 1 to 2 meters in size. The SHPO stated, I asked them a lot about, you know, could these be graves? The SHPO stated that they've done a lot of research on cairns over the years in North Dakota. They've the only way to fully know if they are graves is to expose them and dig them up, which they obviously don't want to do. Leaving them in place is the most important thing, not to impact them in any way. So the route was changed. So those areas are at the closest point, 50 feet from where the construction area is of the pipe, not 50 feet from the pipe, but 50 feet from where they will be constructing, allowed to construct. And so the SHPO talked about, and I'm sure you can get a lot more archaeological facts from the SHPO, but they described the cairns as smaller in size than what would typically be seen for a grave, and located in a location midway up a hill, typically, again, in their expertise, not where you find graves located. Graves would typically, in their opinion, be located higher on the top of a hill. Higher and larger, that's what their indication was. They've done a fair amount of excavation of these in North Dakota, and about 1 to 2% of these, in their experience, end up being graves. So there's a lot of these formations, and of them, a small number ultimately turn up to be graves. Either way, those sites have been protected, not impacted. The route has gone around them, and they will remain as is, untouched. So that's the most important thing. But I was really extremely disappointed that the company failed to notify us about this when it happened. They did the right thing in notifying the SHPO. That was the most important thing, quite honestly, that the SHPO be notified and that construction be stopped, SHPO be notified and the expertise be brought in to effectively delineate where the site is and to develop a reroute around it and ensure that it's not impacted. So that's a good thing. Another good thing, I'm thankful that we stood our ground and asked for increased funding to support a vigorous third-party construction inspection report process, because that has been extremely helpful in this project and in all construction projects. It's important to have good oversight of what's happening, I'm very thankful that we did that and have been making use of that service. But I do want to point out that number 12 in our certification to order provision does state that the company understands and agrees that if any cultural resource, paleontological site, archaeological site, historical site, or grave site is discovered during construction, it must be marked, preserved, and protected from further disturbances until a professional examination can be made and a report of such examination is filed with the commission and the State Historical Society, and clearance to proceed is given by the commission. The company conducted and completed a number of those steps, but they did not complete the step that required them to notify us. So while the most important objective of this finding or this requirement, in my opinion, which is protecting the cultural site, has been achieved, quite honestly, that objective is the majority of the reason for this requirement. However, as I've pondered this over the last 4 or 5 days, there's another important goal of this notification, and that is transparency. Our regulatory approach in North Dakota depends on a level of trust with business. It's guarded trust because we do have the third-party construction inspection program, but trust, nonetheless, is important because we all want the same thing. We all want safe, environmentally sound projects that are built to high standards and with the public trust. This trust demands an exchange and full and prompt disclosure of key information. And that was neglected in this case. Could have been a miscommunication within the company. I understand that. There's a lot of moving parts in this process, and it could have been that the people on the ground didn't fully appreciate or know the process that was required. Nevertheless, all involved need to be informed and on board with what the process is. So I have asked staff, and this is where I want my colleagues to weigh in here. I've asked staff to proceed with the complaint. This will basically state the facts that where we believe the company has failed to comply with our order. The staff will file that complaint. After we get that complaint, we'll make some determination. All the lawyers will have to step in here, and this is a legal process. Determination, prima facie determination. And I believe then we set a hearing, an opportunity for a hearing. The company can respond to the complaint, provide their justification. The staff will propose a fine when they file that complaint for consideration, and there is opportunity for the company to pay the fine and move on. It could ultimately result in a hearing, in which case we will listen to the facts and make a determination on what's appropriate in this based on the staff complaint and the company's response. But I'm hopeful that it doesn't end up in that long of a process, that this is something that happens fairly quickly. I've asked staff to move, you know, in short order, get the complaint filed by the end of this week so we can look at it. The facts are pretty clear. It's not that complicated, and it shouldn't take that much time. So I think we want to move forward quickly on this and not have it linger indefinitely. So that's what I'm recommending. Commissioner Kalk, I think you're still recused from this, or are you?
I continue to consult with legal, but I would think that so far as what you're suggesting would be a violation of the citing order, I would think I would be recused from this.
So, Commissioner Kalk, any thoughts or concerns or things you'd like to suggest we change?
Well, I think, you know, due process, the commission procedures and policies need to run its course, so I'm not going to offer any thoughts too far on a pending case. I will say that I appreciate you walking through the timeline for everyone here to fully put out to the media and anyone listening about the actual sequence of events, because everything that you put out there is the same thing that I'm tracking. So procedural, I think we're lockstep. You as a portfolio holder, I support what you're doing because it's your opportunity to do that. I will look forward to seeing what staff recommends. The only comment I would put is just to put some perspective on the process, to where it's not uncommon that we have companies notify us that something has changed in a route, whether it's a pipeline, whether it's a power line, because of something they found. So it's not like this is an extreme oddity that there's something that's found out there. I think that the oddity perhaps might be the timeliness of notification. And that's one of the things that we'll deliberate in the potential discussion. So, no, I think that at this point in time, I think that it's appropriate where we're headed, and we'll just see where the discussion plays out. And I think, hit the highlights that it wasn't damaged, and so we'll just have to see how it proceeds forward.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner Kalk. That is one good point on the unanticipated discovery plan. This is exactly why you have those in place. They're in place on every project. Because despite multiple surveys, including surveys dating back to the Northern Borders project in this same area, these things can be missed. And so that's why you have the unanticipated discovery plan, where you have the surveyor out there ahead of construction making one last look. And then if they find something, they trigger this process. And I am very comforted by the fact that the process was triggered and carried forward really exactly how it should be, with the exception of them notifying us. So with that, unless anybody else has comments, we'll just open up for questions.
Well, I will just say, you know, not related to this case specifically, but on the subject of unanticipated findings. And, you know, there's the issue of proper notification. So notwithstanding that, like Brian said, this isn't so unusual for there to be an anticipated finding. Not so long ago, within the last month or two, there's something on Facebook on a whole different project than this, where someone was making an accusation. They seen some flags along a different project and were suggesting that something was damaged there. And I checked with the company, and it turned out it was something they had found, and they had flagged it off and very carefully made sure that it didn't get disturbed. And so sometimes these things can create news that appears bad, but really the news ought to be good, that it does in fact show that many of these companies that are building out infrastructure in North Dakota don't stop looking when they get approval. Throughout the process, they continue to watch, and as they're moving closer and more people and eyeballs are on the ground, they're watching for things, and hopefully when they find things, they do the right thing and take care of it, and we'll see where this particular case goes. But I think there's a lot of instances where these things are found and handled properly and respectfully, and to me it's a sign of a pretty good process.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Randy. With that, we can open up questions on that issue, and then when we're done with that, we'll go back to our regular agenda.
Julie, you touched on this, but can you detail what specifically the company is required to do in terms of notification when a site like this is found?
When they find something that is a cultural resource, paleontological site, archaeological site, historical site, or grave during construction, they need to mark it, preserve it, protect it from further disturbances, and get a professional examination and file that with the commission and the State Historical Society, and then get clearance from the commission to proceed.
And is there
and we can get you a copy of that language. It's right in our order.
And is there a set time frame for them to meet that?
There is not spelled out in our order a set time frame. Typically, others, you know, when this has happened in other projects, we usually find out about things right away, in my experience.
I just put some context about previous things that have happened. There's other conditions we put in our orders. Let's take a wind farm, for example, where we had a case where a bald eagle was struck by a turbine. The company notified us, you know, right away, so we get awareness on it. So we have all kinds of different procedures out there. One thing I'd refer people back to is early on in this Dakota Access discussion, there was a worker that was injured, and the company told us right away. And then so we put that out to the media and said, okay, here's what happened. There was a worker that was injured. Everything appears to be it wasn't any protesters causing any problems. It was a fellow just got hurt at work, and it happened to us almost immediately. They notified us. And so there's many provisions in our orders that have the company notify us, and I think the implied intent is that immediately for all of these things, and immediately once you have enough facts to give us information. And so that's kind of looking at things we've done in the past, that's kind of the benchmark that we've always kind of followed. Basin Electric notifies us oftentimes of a power line where they'll go out there and they'll put a footing in and, oh, this doesn't look like quite the spot. They'll notify us, and then we'll let the procedures work themselves out.
The company, to that note, has been notifying us on injuries on a pretty consistent basis that have occurred, and those have been basically as soon as the injuries have happened, we've been notified, and they did notify SHPO right away, and so they should have notified us at the same time as SHPO so that we could all be kind of engaged in the process together.
But just to be clear, the potential violation here is not the delay, but the fact that they moved on before they got clearance?
That's what will come out in the investigation. I'm still getting information from the company and through staff trying to figure out what the status of the construction in this site is right now.
That might be the next decision point as I look forward to my role in this. I mean, the portfolio holder will prepare with staff what they think is appropriate, and then if it meets the prima facie requirement, then I would vote for it. If it doesn't, then I would vote against it. So that, I think, is probably one of the key steps. Let staff and the portfolio holder put their package together, get a chance to review it, and then make a determination on that, and then that will decide whether we go forward or not.
Actually, I won't be involved in them putting that together. They'll do that separately.
Okay. But you had mentioned before that there's no set time frame for notifying you.
Correct.
So therefore, there couldn't – my understanding of that is that there is no violation for a delay in reporting.
We'll work that out. That'll remain to be seen.
What kind of – oh, go ahead.
Why isn't Standing Rock included in the contact list on the unanticipated discovery plan? There's several contacts, including Cheyenne River, but Standing Rock is not on there.
That's a question for the State Historical Preservation Office, who reviews the unanticipated discovery plan and signs off on it.
What kind of penalties could be levied on Dakota Access?
The maximum penalty is $10,000 per day per violation, every day of the violation, and a maximum of $200,000. Now, do I view this as the most serious violation of possible for the for this order? No, I don't. I mean, the crime, the punishment has to fit the crime. I'm one that views, like, if you're going to use the most serious penalty, then you need to make sure that you're using that in the most serious crime. And so I think there's worse things that could have happened, that you want to save those higher, the highest level for those. And so I would expect that the fine won't max out, but we'll leave it up to staff to determine that. And then we have jurisdiction ourselves to propose a smaller fine in the process if we feel that's appropriate.
The damage prevention stuff we do, the staff recommends a fine. We go if it needs to go to a hearing. If something comes out in the hearing, we think it should be reduced or increased. That all will come out as this thing unfolds.
What sort of direct communication have you had with the company since you were notified, and what have you guys been talking about?
The staff has had some direct communication with the company just in terms of saying, here's, you know, what we need to know, and get us information back, and that kind of back and forth has occurred. You've really seen what we've gotten from the company. I don't know if you've seen it, Bo, but it's available for you to look at.
Do you think that this unanticipated discovery lends itself toward the arguments that the protesters have been making this whole time?
And spell out what arguments you're referring to, please. I do not believe that, and I think that the unanticipated discovery is something that is that we prepare for in every single project, because you can do the surveys, you can do the studies, you look at everything that's been identified in the past, you walk the route, and you can miss stuff. Stuff can be missed. There was a case just in recently in the airport construction in Williston where even the tribal monitor missed some key find in that area. That's why you have that anticipated discovery plan. That's why it's a special plan that is reviewed by the archaeologists ahead of time and approved, so that everybody's on board with what needs to be happening. That's why you have environmental inspectors on site during construction doing the kind of work that was done that ultimately found this. All those pieces are because this can happen. And it worked. The process worked. It was found. It was identified. It was portioned off. It was protected.
Julie, you said that you would direct staff to proceed with a complaint. As for the wording of that complaint, will it be something general, like you may have violated a PSC rule, or will it be something more specific?
The staff in a complaint, and I won't be writing the complaint, obviously the staff will be, and so I can't prescribe what will be in it, but it will basically lay out the factual reasons why they think the company, where they failed to comply with the order, and propose a fine.
As far as failing to comply, I've asked this before, but is it the delay, or is it the fact that they moved on without getting proper clearance?
It could be one or both. Okay. Again, I don't have the facts yet myself on what the status of the construction was, at what point the company moved on, if they did, who approved it, in my opinion, they should have filed this with us right away. So I think the delay is grounds as well, but we'll see what the staff determines.
You mentioned that they've been filing notice with you guys almost immediately for injuries. Is there any reason why you think they didn't file notice with you immediately on this?
I don't have a reason for that. I'm sure that the company will provide that in their response to us. And I hope that you interview the company and ask them that question.
Was this site near the area where this last protest took place on October 27th?
If you're referring to the sites of concern earlier, this is 2 miles, 2.5 miles west of that.
2.5 miles west of that.
Yep.
And then it was the same company that was K2, were they working with at the beginning when on September 3rd that area was cleared after a tribal person said that there was what they believed as significant sites? Were they K2 working with under the PSC, or is that, are they hired by Dakota Pipe Act?
No, K2 is hired by us.
Okay.
And they do spot checks throughout the construction, and they were not on that location at that time.
So they didn't check that area that the tribe had said that they felt that there was significant culture of finds before it was destroyed? They had not checked that area? K2 had not checked?
Well, so K2 is, they're our third-party construction inspector, so they're monitoring the entire construction process on the whole line. And so we can talk to our staff about their process, but they aren't typically out there looking ahead of time at the sites. That work has been done by the archaeologists beforehand. And then the company has their inspector on site doing, that's not the same as the K2 inspector. So our inspectors aren't out there ahead of time looking, doing extra work to try to identify.
They called in after the tribe had said that they felt that there was something there. They weren't called in after?
They were not. No, they were not, because at that point SHPO was involved, and SHPO has greater expertise than our third-party construction experts on archaeological issues.
But wasn't SHPO looking at it after the fact?
SHPO looked at it after the fact, but ours would have been looking at it after the fact as well.
Okay, because looking...
They don't do ahead of construction inspections is what I'm saying. Our monitors don't do inspections ahead of construction.
So is that a process that the PSC could maybe... do differently in the future, in that when a tribal archaeologist or whoever says that there's something significant, that the PSC actually could say, well, let's take a look at it and not wait until it's destroyed to look at it? Because looking at that site that's been found, that's been preserved now, I could see a bulldozer going over there and there'd be no evidence that it was ever there.
If I'm understanding you correctly, you're saying that the PSC should get engaged, should have gotten involved, and we did through the SHPO. I mean, our SHPO
right.
was really...
I'm just saying that maybe in this case, because it was a controversial issue, that the PSC maybe could have actually taken and said, let's take a look at it from this other perspective, and then not just go with what SHPO said after the fact. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like when it was pointed out by that archaeologist or whatever historian from the tribe,
mm-hmm.
you know, when it was pointed out by them, where the PSC could have stepped in before it was destroyed, that area destroyed, and then it would eliminate any mistrust that there would be through the tribe or through other people in the, you know, citizens of North Dakota through the process. I'm wondering if we couldn't do better as a state.
Well, we'll be looking for all kinds of ways that we can do better and trying to find ways to do things better and always do, not just when triggered by this type of thing, but we're constantly looking for ways to improve. But as I understand that process and what happened and how that unfolded, the artifacts that Mintz identified, he identified them after the grading had occurred, and he went in and identified those artifacts. At that point, we did talk to the SHPO. I had several conversations with the SHPO. How are you monitoring this? What's going on? How is this going to be handled? And there was a lot of discussions about that, and they ultimately went out there twice and looked at that and at those sites and did significant studies on what was there. And how those, you know, value, how those rank in terms of protection and that sort of thing. So the SHPO we did have conversations with them, and they did get involved, and we don't have access to expertise greater than SHPO. I mean, they are the state's historical experts, and they understand the laws, and they understand what is and isn't, you know, considered a protectable archaeological find in North Dakota. Those are all spelled out. They handle all of that, which is why I'm not trying to skirt the issues or try to duck questions or push things off on SHPO, but I'm not an archaeologist, and that's a very scientific field. So they need to be in control of that, and they are, and we rely on them.
If I could just go back to just one point. I think our discussion today is about the one action. I think we're going off somewhere
else.
But
you know, members of the public have questions about that too, and I'm happy to.
I just wanted to highlight one thing that I think you said that I want to make sure that the colleagues out there listening hear, that the third party inspectors are the ones that brought this to light, and because you went out and ask for additional money from the company to hire more third-party inspectors, this is where we're at. So it's the good work that was laid out in the beginning about the process. You said, let's go find some more inspectors to get more eyes on the ground. That worked. And that's how really one of the things that the backdrop of third-party inspectors is what I wanted to talk about, is the commission has a requirement, responsibility to go look at these construction inspections and post-construction. So we went out and started using third-party inspectors years ago, and by having more of those on the ground, I think was because of good planning. And I think that can be minimized as this discussion goes on, that it was because of forward-looking, having more people out there, that we were able to identify some of this stuff.
I agree. Anything else?
When sites like these are found, is the state under any obligation to notify the tribe, or does that fall solely with the pipeline company?
I'm not completely sure about that. I've heard mixed things, so again, SHPO would know those requirements.
One of the things that has happened with the discussion of the SHPO over the years, it was probably 4 or 5 years ago that the SHPO came to the PSC and said, we want to make sure that you have the information to make decisions on projects, but we don't want to make sure that the information of all these sites is so easy for someone to find to go out there and destroy these sites. So there's been ongoing discussion over the years about making sure that we have enough information to make our decisions, whether it's a wind farm or a pipeline or a power line, but also that the SHPO can talk to the appropriate agencies to make sure that the work is going on, but also to make this information out there so there's not, I don't know the best term, not people that are going out there to cause malice to these sites. So there's this balance that I'd encourage you to talk to SHPO about making sure they share the information with the agencies they determine appropriate, the people they determine appropriate, but also to make sure we're still protecting some of these sites from people that might do them harm. In a general nature, we've had that discussion for several years.
I have kind of an unrelated question, but it's on Dakota Access. In light of President Obama's comments last night about looking into rerouting, what's the feasibility of a reroute at this time, and have you had any communications with the Corps about the easement?
I haven't had any. I saw those comments, and I haven't had any communication with the Corps about what they're looking at or how, because I just read those late last night. If that happens, I mean, obviously the company has to build up, change the route of where they already have pipe in the ground to get to that location and get new easements, and that would involve a siting process with us. And my view of the president's approach there is I appreciate trying to get everybody on board, but there is a process in place. It's a legal process. It's been upheld in 2 courts. 4 judges reviewed what was done, what consultation opportunities were provided, what the environmental impact of this route was and is, why the Corps determined it to be the least, dug into on the consultation process. We can change this consultation process an infinite number of ways moving forward. But I have grave concerns about changing it and retroactively applying it to a company that already completed the process and received the permits. I just don't think that's good public policy. And it doesn't create the kind of certainty you need to make these kind of massive investments in infrastructure, which everybody is touting. I've listened to Hillary Clinton and Trump talk extensively in the last week. We have to have more infrastructure in this country. We desperately need more infrastructure. It's aging. It's crumbling. This is infrastructure. This is $3.5 billion worth of new high-tech infrastructure. Takes pressure off the other crumbling infrastructure, roads, rail bridges. I mean, it's really astounding to me that people think it's safer to transport crude oil 50 feet above the river on an old railroad bridge than 92 feet below the river in a brand new pipeline. That's just, it's not logical. So I think Obama is going down a path that is going to be difficult to complete, and I don't expect him to come up with a decision by the end of his term.
And going forward with the cost of the security of allowing these workers to be in there, really, the protests and the demand for security needed for them to implement and put the pipeline in the ground, is that going to change the way the PSC looks at projects in the future, in that this is costing the taxpayers, according to some reports, $500,000 a day? This is directly related to the company going in and to the PSC okaying it. So as taxpayers, shouldn't we expect that some of those costs be foreseeable in the future in projects of this size, if there is projects like this that come again, and that the security is addressed in the situation?
It remains to be seen how the security will be covered and paid for. I think there's been a number of different options floated, federal, state, local, even tribal resources. But I have to say, I really shudder to think that all future infrastructure projects will have to be built under gunpoint. We have a legal process for siting these projects, and they're legal in our country today. If people want to change the laws and make them illegal, then we can do that. But when they're legal and they've been permitted appropriately, then they shouldn't have to be built under gunpoint.
Well, and speaking of gunpoint, with a DAPL employee having a gun in his truck, is this what we as public should expect anybody that is a construction worker to be armed?
I don't quite honestly follow all of these security issues. Because we have enough to follow here in relating to the actual permitting process and the issues at the PSC, and we have no jurisdiction on the law enforcement side of things. So I don't even know if what you're saying is true.
Employee, like when you're talking about injuries, you know, if you have an armed person or you're taking your guns to work, there is the risk of negligent discharge. There's also the risk of public being involved in a confrontation where that weapon is used on a person. And so as a public, we should have a right to know that our construction workers are armed.
I agree with you. The construction workers shouldn't have to be armed. But the construction workers also have a right to go to work and not feel threatened. And that has been not the case in this project.
I could, Madam Chair, that I guess my thoughts on this whole ordeal, I mean, you've heard us talk over the while. I mean, if you go back to a company filed an application. We held over a year of deliberation. We held three hearings. We picked a very good procedure that we followed for many, many years in the commission. We went out and asked the hard questions. I've always felt from the beginning that the concerns at Standing Rock, the peaceful protesters had, were legitimate concerns about cultural sites, and we have procedures in place about water quality. We have procedures in place. I thought there were legitimate concerns that we dealt with. We made a decision on a very good route. The question about should we change the route, this is a very good route. If you're going to build a pipeline, this is as safe as it can be built. And so somewhere along the line, after people understood the process that the PSC went through, and somewhere people got a full vetting of what really happened, and now with this unintended discovery, we've got procedures that we have in place that we're dealing with it. But to be candid, I mean, there's a backdrop of people that do not want fossil fuels, and they have basically, I think, taken a system and used it for their own benefit to stop the development of fossil fuels. And you come up with, there's legitimate discussion that we've had about pipeline safety, legitimate discussion about archaeological facts, legitimate discussion about emergency response, all those things that we've answered the mail on. At the end of the day, there's groups that do not want fossil fuels to move, and they will do whatever they can to stop it. And so that, I think, we've tried to really, as a commissioner, I'm trying to separate these issues. I've got a responsibility to follow the law, the jurisdiction that I have, to make decisions what's in front of me. All the things that others are talking about, that's a discussion that I think is taking place, that will people follow the rule of law? What's going to go forward with energy development? I started off today with my rampage about wind development. Well, you could take this to crude oil in this case. You could take it to natural gas. If our country is going to have low-cost energy, which is good for everyone, we're going to need pipelines. We're going to need power lines. We're going to need energy generation. So I think that what we really need is cooler heads to prevail on both sides on these issues, to understand that we need infrastructure. And when someone makes a decision like the PSC on something and puts out there, when something is reviewed by a court that is reaffirmed, people accept that and don't go to the extremes that you're talking about. I spent 20 years in the Marine Corps, and I saw third-world countries where they don't follow the rule of law. Well, that's what we're having down here. It's very unfortunate. But the people are using the process to twist it, to turn it, to meet their agenda, which is anti-fossil fuel. So I think that's where we could go on and on and about this, but I think that's the backstory here, and I think the media has covered that very well. But I think what's going to happen now with this process today, it's going to reignite all this rhetoric. We have a very good procedure in place that we're going to follow, and we'll make a decision accordingly. But at the end of the day, people should follow the rule of law and accept it. And that's just not happening today. So it's unfortunate, but I'm not going to be skewed by some of this. We'll do what's right and keep moving forward.
Madam Chair, point of order.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I'm not on this case, I'm still a member of this commission. And we do a lot of things here. And one of the things that we've done in the last couple of years is have 3 days of hearings on Dakota Access in multiple locations so no one would have to travel far. We had multiple work sessions. There's been all kinds of discussions. And when those things were happening, other things had to be put off. Like I said, we do a lot of things. We have other things on our agenda for this afternoon, and we have staff as well as ourselves that need to be prepared. The agenda item here is an unanticipated discovery. And as we venture off into who should be armed and who shouldn't and who's threatened and who's not, and we're getting way beyond our agenda, and it distracts from other things, and I think we need to kind of contain it somewhere close to our agenda.
We've entertained some questions beyond that, and I don't have a problem doing that, and I'm happy to have further discussions after the fact at any point. So anyone who'd like to visit with me can do so, but you're right. So let's get back on track. Are there any more questions about the matter at hand here? Sir?
Yes. Just appreciated the timely notice of the hearing that you proposed.
I'll have you talk with Stacy, and she'll get your contact information and can walk you through where to find our information and how to get it, so make sure you're well aware of when we'll be discussing this in the future. Okay, thank you.
Because we do want the public to participate.
Absolutely. Yep.
And that might be a downfall. It may not. The three hearings that you already held, I live in Mandan in Morton County. And I am just shocked at what has taken place and shocked that I didn't know about any of this coming forward. And then when I looked at the date that was held in Morton County, in Mandan, at Baymont Inn, it said May 28th. Well, that's Memorial Weekend. That's not a very conducive weekend for the public to be involved. They have graduations, and it's Memorial Weekend.
It wasn't on the weekend. It would have been a day before, around
that's
maybe.
That's what I've seen on your website. I might not be able to navigate your website.
No, the date would be correct, but it wasn't on the weekend. We do make every effort to have these hearings.
The 28th is right around Memorial Weekend.
You know, fair enough.
Thursday.
Hundreds of people attended, so there was lots of people that was standing room only in that hearing. So, okay. Any other questions on the unanticipated discovery? If not, thank you very much. We will move on to the next agenda item, which is a federal mine plan modification approval process.
This item was put on the agenda at the request of Commissioner Kalk following the prolonged approval process that it took for Cotulla Properties Company's recent mine plan approval. And I guess Commissioner Kalk, I guess willing to discuss whatever you like as far as our overall process on this, and that this certainly took much longer than
I think what I remember you having this discussion with you, Jim, was just trying to what broke it free, finally, was the question I had. And going forward, is there something that we could learn out of this, or is this just the way it played out?
You know, on this, as far as what finally spurred the action, I don't know if it was, I think, probably a combination of things. I think Coteau had been contacting the Assistant Secretary's office on a regular basis. Senator Hoven had contacted her on different occasions, and I think the letter that was sent to OSM in response to their request that we basically work with Coteau or come up with a plan to require replacement of self bonds, and the response saying I think that might have finally got some movement on that. I really don't know. I guess particularly when Assistant Secretary Schneider made the comment and basically apologized for the request that came from OSM in asking us to engage Coteau in the process to replace their self bonds. So,
thanks, Jim. I don't remember exactly what I was asking for, but I think that was it.
Okay.
Okay. Very good. Then joint state comments to FERC. Jack.
All right, the acting chief ALJ at FERC right now, he recently put out a public notice. It was August 30th that essentially to guide future settlement discussions that occur at FERC. What he's asking and requesting was that each party that is present at a settlement negotiation must have representative capacity to actually sign off at that settlement discussion in order to participate. So what I'm requesting, along with other states, is that I'd be given permission to sign on with the other states, essentially requesting a clarification from the chief ALJ, the acting chief ALJ, about that statement, or to make an exception for state agencies such as our Public Service Commission. Because as you know, it can be difficult to essentially have someone in representative capacity present at FERC to be able to sign off. It usually requires a full consensus of all the commissioners.
It's hard to refocus after the previous discussion.
I know. You're going to have to repeat the main point. Do we have to decide something, or are you just informing us?
I'm requesting permission to sign off with the other states.
On a process that would allow us to be remote?
A joint state motion saying we would not need somebody
present
at the in-person settlement discussions.
Perfect. I think that's great.
As long as we're not going to try to have negotiations, we know where we're at in our position. As long as you're giving a proxy, if you will, I'm okay with that.
Once we're ready to sign off, we can do so by whatever. Don't have to be present, right?
Correct. Yeah. So instead of one of the commissioners being there and being able to sign off in that exact moment, yeah, we could come back and then come back after having a meeting.
Yeah.
So you're asking us to approve that you sign on to a request that exempts us from that requirement that we have someone there that can sign off.
That is correct, Commissioner.
Okay. Sounds good. Thanks, Jack, and thanks for continuing to follow that. Okay. I see you've added.
Works easier when you use my agenda.
PomD presenter. I can't read your writing.
Damage prevention. What was
okay.
That
Tom the presenter.
it's looked like Palm D presenter.
There was a question. Oh, I know. Where's Vic at? Vic wanted to talk to us. I know what it was. Remember how we were turning stuff over to collections? And I wasn't ready to say I think we should turn more cases over to collection. Vic has followed up with some letters with a little more beef to him on some of these companies that haven't paid things. And he wanted to know if we should turn over more to the collection agencies. And I said, I'm still not quite there yet for turning more over to collections, but I guess I wanted to see where you guys were
at. How come?
Well, I think we were going to just have the discussion. We don't know if the first one is working or not, and it doesn't seem so. If you guys are okay with it, I guess I'm indifferent at this point.
It doesn't seem to be a big downside because they just get paid by a percent of what they collect, right?
That is correct.
But have we had any success in these at all?
We have had no success in collection so far. I didn't expect any with the ones we sent. I mean,
okay. Well,
a test of their talent.
Well, but
absolutely.
I guess I think the first time we wanted to make sure that nothing quote bad happened on this. But if everything's going good, I guess to your point, Julie, I think that becomes protocol. After a certain point, we turn it over to collection. I'm okay with that as long as we all three agree. And,
yep.
And you're telling us that there's some assurance that everything's going like we thought it would.
I think everything's going as I expected it would. I mean, you know, like we said, they haven't had any success, but there's not a terribly high likelihood of success with the cases we gave to them.
But it closes the loop for us in our process.
It does. Okay. It shows that we're taking action and not just letting these things sit out there. The one I'd like to turn over, we've given them more than enough time. There was the period they had after the order was issued. After that was done, we sent them a strongly worded letter saying, you need to pay this, and that time has lapsed as well. So,
I think strongly worded letters I thought always work. But I'm fine with this, but I do want to emphasize when we're doing this, and I suppose there's all kinds of collection agencies out there, we need to be keeping our eyes open and our ears open if we ever get a hold of a not a good one that's doing things that they shouldn't be doing.
Right.
We want to be able to separate ourselves from that because I don't want any illegal or immoral actions taking place in order to...
Absolutely. And that is actually part of their contract with the state.
These come through the state system. These are like approved by...
Yep.
OMB or something like that, right?
Yep. They were vetted through state OMB procurement.
Procurement.
That is one of the requirements is they have to, act in such a way to not present a bad image for the state. You know, I forget the exact wording, but their
conduct. Give us an update in January where we're at in this, and then we maybe throw this in our testimony to the legislators saying that we continue to enforce damage prevention. We're doing this just to give awareness out there.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Thanks, Vic.
Can you read my next writing?
And the next one is wind discussion. Was that...
Yes, the
dog and pony show.
Yeah, the collecting of where North Dakota is on wind development.
Yeah.
Yes, I guess just I can work through with either Jerry or Sarah and Stacy and come up with some plans. But I was thinking at least two, maybe four places to do this, and I wasn't thinking until January, February time frame.
Maybe and are you tied to focusing it on wind development? Because I would like to broaden it beyond that. And provide a bigger context.
I'm not tied to anything.
I think what I see in wind development is part of it is rising utility costs.
Okay.
I mean, that's what customers are going to see. And what's driving that?
See, I think I'm not against that, but I was thinking initially of just the complexities of the wind, particularly with the bugs and bunnies stuff and the land issues and the economic development because we're becoming economic regulators instead of energy regulators. So if we cannot lose sight of that discussion, you know, those four points.
There's real policy issues there.
Agreed.
That you'd be bringing up. And where would we take them? I mean, it would be awkward in terms of the timing because we wouldn't have any time to develop initiatives to address any of the concerns before the legislative session. I can envision getting a lot of pro or anti-wind bringing in their own data that may or may not be scientific.
So I'm not sure what we would be seeking in terms of a result.
Well, I think that you're right. The timing for this legislative session is going to be tough. But I think it's a discussion to have and to see where it goes. There's interim committees. We brief out all the time about things. If you want to add in the broadness a little bit, I'm okay with that. So I can take your thoughts and bounce them together and put together some, I mean, figure out dates and places. And then Randy probably has some things we could put around topics. But I think if we're going to do this, we could break it out into, you know, a two-hour block or something. I don't know exactly. Mm-hmm.
I see your concerns on the wind side.
It could be wind or solar, and you could broaden it to a lot of things.
It could be renewables. You could talk about siting impacts. I mean, I've thought that we should be trying to get a study commissioned this legislative session that takes a view of North Dakota wind development, a serious view, gets Terry involved,
mm-hmm.
and get the Game of Fish folks involved to, you know, look at the environmental impacts in North Dakota, get the realtors and some of those folks involved to look at property value impacts and get a North Dakota study, not financed by the wind industry, about what are the impacts, what are the real impacts, and maybe they're not, maybe they aren't any, there aren't any, but it sure would be nice to know without facts. So that's something that's not related to this, but addressing some of the issues that you mentioned there that I think could produce a product that would be really valuable to us.
Just the third thing to add into the mix is part of this seems like a part of a similar analysis to me is what's providing the backup to the wind? Mm-hmm. The coal is not ever meant to be backup type of power. And, you know, you can add 50 or 100 megawatts somewhere, and I don't know, like we heard yesterday, if it's operating, it's operating. If it's not, they're fine too, you know. So you kind of sort of sounded to me like those 12 megawatts were a waste of money. But.
Which one was that?
Up there by Valva.
They basically said they don't figure it in any of the models yesterday.
Oh, yeah. It's there.
But the bottom line is, in a decade, we've added like 2,000 megawatts and growing quickly. And it just almost seems to me, and there is one pretty big exception to this, that have built some peaking plants to back up their wind resources, or at least some of them. But a lot of these come in, and it's about getting the tax credits and moving on, and to the extent that a backup source is needed in order to really make this useful, that should be on somebody else. And then when the rates go up, because the company has to acquire additional power for when the wind's not blowing, everybody shrugs their shoulders. It has nothing to do with the wind. Well, it kind of did. And so the bottom line is, I think part of this discussion that I've been focused on and trying to get my arms around is how is our backup power comparing to the growth in the intermittent power.
Where do we get that information, the power, the companies?
Jerry probably knows some of that off the top of his head, but.
The utilities are required to maintain a generating capability.
Right, the capacity.
And that's up to them. They have to do that. And they also have energy that they have to get. And so when they buy wind, they get a little bit of capacity credit for it, but nothing near the nameplate. And they have to carry their load plus a reserve margin and capacity. So their cheapest way to operate with energy that they have to produce and with the capacity that they have to maintain is the way that they should be going forward.
But to Randy's question, if I'm understanding you correctly, I mean, yeah, that is happening. The companies are doing it. But it would be nice to understand what are they using.
And as long as organizations like MISO can continue to just shift the backup demand a little bit and lessen that percentage and things like that, then I guess you can always get along until you don't get along anymore. And then we're going to be in a crisis.
Well, that's where Minnesota...
It's going to be the regulators who are going to be blamed for not having kept an eye on it. Nobody, someday when we have significant outages in the dead of winter or the heat of summer, none of the citizens in North Dakota are going to pick up the phone and try and find in the directory MISO to get a hold of them and complain about the fact that they didn't make sure that there was adequate backup.
Oh, you're right.
Well, I'll put together some kind of agenda, and then maybe we could talk about the time frame. Is that a time frame okay, February? Or do you want to do it later? I don't know, earlier?
It's on the session, I guess, maybe. That can work. I'm not opposed to it. And as we're talking and talking about these various components and how they might spin together, you could maybe do, like, 2 hours in the morning about what I'm concerned about, utility costs and all the factors driving the transformation of the utility industry. And then you could do an afternoon focused on renewables and, you know, what are the impacts. And include, the reliability in there either with as part of the renewables component. How do you back them up and how are those decisions made and what is it, what's being used and, you know, all that. So maybe you could split it that way so people who are only interested in one component could come for the morning or the afternoon. And we could just spend a little bit longer time.
Okay.
You're talking about the geographical. Yeah. You're not talking about Bismarck, everything.
No, I was thinking some kind
Fargo,
of spread.
Grand Forks.
Grand Forks. Stanley. I mean, Minot. I don't know. Some. I wouldn't maybe hit the big cities, but maybe consider one in the middle of somewhere where there's been development.
Does MDU serve Stanley?
Stanley is served by MDU, sure. Right? Karen? Yeah, for you guys.
Stanley.
No, it's electric.
No, they are served by MDU.
Town.
Basin.
Town? Okay.
What about or Wofford? Does I think you guys have Wofford, don't you?
We have Wofford.
Yeah. Might be an interesting one.
Okay. Just so we go somewhere we're open. Okay. I'll throw something together. I'll methodically plan something.
Awesome. All right. So that concludes our discussion matters. We can move down to scheduling. And
on that last one, though, Brian?
Sure.
I don't know the dates of it, but it would be available on the Legislative Council website.
Awesome.
You know, as you get near that last couple weeks before crossover, and then probably the last 3 weeks of April, we could get awful busy.
Yeah. All right. Fair enough.
Okay, so we move to the budget meeting. I think, Jill, why don't whoever needs to pop up to the mics for the scheduling matters. And, yep, Jill's got some dates for us. We were going to look at this again. There was some sort of trigger, wasn't there?
Any time after the 17th, probably the data that goes into PeopleSoft, those reports aren't updated until, like, the 10th to the 12th. And then we would just want a couple dates to get everything put together. So anytime after November 17th, it would just need to be an hour-long meeting.
So you think.
So we think.
All right. So after the 17th, we have a work session on the 18th on weights and measures. Did we at one point think about maybe that it would be good to do this in tandem with that?
Sure. I'm open before then.
9 a.m.?
Sure.
Randy, does that work?
Yep.
Okay, mm-hmm. 9 a.m. on the 18th of November. Great. Thank you, Jill.
Yeah,
9 a.m. All right, MISO update, Jerry.
Jerry, you're driving me crazy with these things, just so you know.
We have to give them new names so we can keep them separate.
And I think it should
they
be.
They all sound like the same to me. It's not really staff's fault. It's ours because we can't keep anything straight.
Now, is this the one they want to come talk to us? Or is this one where we've been trying to get. I don't need to talk to MISO. I need to talk to our IOUs.
I think that.
They always want to come on.
I know they do.
It's always Thanksgiving time.
It's because they traveled
out. Carrie asked me when we were going to have another MISO update briefing after we were unable to attend their overlay discussions. Remember that?
Yep.
And so I put it on admin to see if you want to schedule something. There's no hurry on it, but the overlay that they're talking about again would be a discussion. They're starting another study to try and come up with another set of projects.
Well, I would offer up that we should make it, if we're going to do it, and make it a MISO and SPP, give them both an hour and a half, and do it the same morning or the same afternoon, and we do it in January.
I'm fine with whatever.
Just because if we're going to do one, let's get SPP up here, too. They'll want to come up here. There's an SPP meeting the end of January that I'm going to go down to, or Vic. It's the session that week of the 23rd, as of now, is wide open. I'm sure we'll have legislative stuff, but.
Pick a day?
The 24th.
That's the day we have the telco's lunch.
How come that's not on my calendar yet?
Because last time, we forgot to reschedule to discuss.
We have that information, Commissioner.
Last time we put it off because we weren't sure if they were talking about a lunch or a breakfast.
Okay, so
Commissioner, I got the information this morning from them, so I was going to bring that up as an extra.
Okay. So what is it?
What is it? Yeah,
it is January 24th at noon. You'd asked if I looked into a possible agenda. This is the Rural Telephone Cooperative. The manager all going to be in town. He hasn't an official agenda yet, but he has three items that he wants to consider for the agenda. One is the fiber output, their wireless call concerns, and if there's any legislation that they may be presenting.
So this is the same meeting as the morning thing that we've done in the past?
Must replace the breakfast thing.
It's just more of the managers are going to be in town at that time.
All right. Okay, so you'll add that. So we want to skip the noon, but what else? What did you suggest? Half a day on the 24th?
3 hours for the two of them.
So, I mean, the rest of that day is pretty open.
You know, how about the afternoon of the 24th or the morning of the 25th?
What day is it?
24th? The 24th is a Tuesday, so the afternoon.
Gotcha.
Yep, and then
I'd prefer the afternoon of the 24th.
Okay.
We probably want to make it 2, though, because that manager's meeting sometimes, or maybe we can start that a little earlier, start at 11.
Go from 2 to 5?
Yeah.
Sure.
On the 24th?
Yeah.
Okay.
That work, Jerry?
Yep.
And then, Vic, if you're out there, you can notify SPP or Jerry. You guys can talk to. They'll be happy to come up here and tell us what's going on.
Okay. Informal hearing NSP electric rate increase, ADPs for transmission line investment.
This is the one where I told Pat, I said, I just want to do an schedule informal now because there's no way I'm not going to, my viewpoint, just try to do a work session on this. I want an informal at least.
All right. Yep. Fine with me. How soon?
That I don't know. Just today we issued the notice.
Yeah, with a comment period through 14 December. So, any time is good.
I think they probably would sooner than later, maybe. What about December? I'll throw out 8th.
Well, wouldn't they want and us want to wait until after that? Because if someone requests a formal, then we wouldn't need the informal.
That's
so. Don't we need to wait until after the?
Yeah, we a lot
timeline.
Of times yeah. In between just.
I think your chances are pretty slim. That
yeah. The 8th, I'm gone. So, okay. And the 9th, I leave the 8th for that, the rest of that weekend. So,
okay.
The 7th would work.
We already have, that problem. Oh, that's shot. That's
Dale
telco
Santrum
stuff and Dale's thing, and I got something else cooking that day.
Yeah, the 5th, 6th, and 7th don't work
okay.
Very
bad. Well, the 13th. And that's the day
would work.
In the afternoon, because we'll be around the next day for the commission meeting.
That works.
Okay.
Works for me.
Okay.
1:30? 13th.
13th.
Tuesday. So that should work for you, Jer.
Yep.
Okay. Informal on NSP rate increase. What's this now?
I can't see it.
generation. Can we do those together?
We can.
Generation resource additions?
There are two separate. The one is they request, the previous meeting we had we set a notice for, they wanted the same thing for transmission. They want to pull them out of the ADPs. And so the first one would be on the transmission, the second one is on generation. So they're very similar, but the issues would be a little bit different. So we talked about maybe merging them together, and I said, no, transmission with MISO and the way costs are allocated, there's a different argument than there is for generation.
Can we just do them back to back?
It seems like it's a good, not a joint meeting, but it seems like it's a good thing to do the same day. It'd be a lot of the same people. And
yeah. I'm fine with that.
So we did 1:30 and 2:30. So that the first one.
Maybe 1:30 and 3.
We didn't talk that long.
Well,
I don't care.
It doesn't matter. We can notice them 1:30 and 2:30, and if we just roll, we'd roll.
Yeah. Okay. 2:30. November 13th at 2:30. Don't want to give you too much time to pontificate. I'm just getting started.
That's right.
November.
That's
December.
No, that's December. Oops, okay. I wrote November on my December. On yours, I wrote on yours.
We keep it because I trust the system.
Informal hearing, MDU pipeline safety enforcement consent agreement.
Okay, so Pat and I once again are pontificating, and there's a consent agreement that Pat has and folks have put together, and I want to have a hearing on it. Informal. It's similar to the Granville case.
Yes, us or something.
Unless you just want to de facto give me the ball and this stuff.
No, it's fine. I'm fine doing a work session. You must have a reason.
It's an informal, actually.
Yeah.
It'd be just like the Granville one, I think, is what we're envisioning.
Okay. I think that's a good plan because they are a little more technical. Yeah. Okay, so what's the time schedule on this one?
We have the consent agreement for both of the cases has been filed. And so anytime, I have some times that don't work for Craig if you wanted him to be in the, you know, in the hearing. But
okay. So I'm assuming on this, since the consent agreement is here and it'd be nice to tie it up, we should look at November.
If we can.
Yep.
I'm looking at the
and the dates that are off for him.
He just said not the week of November 21st.
Oh, okay. And you're gone the
next week. The week before is NARUC.
The 17th and 18th I'm in that week. So those would be possibilities. Well, see, we've got
get a work pretty session. Well booked up on the 17th, I think.
You know, the afternoon the 17th, we just have Dr. Jones's retirement. But
no, I have the LeagueNet Research Council.
Oh, that's today. What we're open. Okay.
And the 18th, we just added one at 9, but we could do one, you know, at 11, or we could go in the afternoon.
We have a work session at 11 now that should be on there on the 18th. Weights and measures.
Mine is on for 10.
Will?
I show it from 10 to 11.
Me too.
I'm on for 11. Yeah. Okay, what I'll get that.
It must be on Mountain Time.
Could be.
I mean, no, Eastern Time.
I don't know.
That's weird. Okay, but we added one at 9 that morning, I know. So we could do 11. So we'd go 3 in a row, which sometimes gets hard. I think we should do like 1:30.
That's fine.
But if we get down to the first one by about 11, we could just take our lunch a little early. Maybe we could start it at 12:30 or 1.
That's fine.
Doesn't matter to me in that regard. So this is the
November 18th.
Yeah. Does that date work for Craig?
I'm on Bogota time for it.
Oh.
Well.
Funny. Interesting.
Okay. I believe it does work for Craig, so.
The 18th? Okay. So you want to say 12:30?
Yeah.
Okay. 18th at 12:30, November. Okay.
Commissioner, you had mentioned something about the luncheon for the RTC being at 11. Do you still want to go there? It's 12 still, okay.
What time did we set?
12.
What time did we set our meetings? I thought we did like 1:30 and 2:30, right?
Right.
On the same day?
Yes.
So we shouldn't, we should try to start before 12. Absolutely. Because it's a long discussion usually.
No, we set our meeting from 2 to 5. With MISO and SPP.
Oh, I'm looking at different date. What date is this? The 24th?
January 24th.
January 24th.
Okay. Well, we'll probably be okay with 2 to 5. We don't need to start any different.
Okay. I'll do that.
But you should mention to him that we have at 2 o'clock.
Okay. I will do that. I will let him know that.
And the other meeting on the
18th? If they wanted to start at 11:30 or so, I don't think we'd have any problem with.
They have a lot of things to talk about.
Because I have one thing to add to that, and that is, and I just have gotten some more feedback back, but Pat and I have started a dialogue about all these various FCC forms that they have to file, and the FCC requires them to file them also with us, and then our legal staff goes through all this process that's required by law in order to do the confidentiality stuff. And we're trying to find a better way. We're just using up a lot of legal resources on that. And that's a good point for discussion with them, too, when we'd have those managers in the room.
Okay. All right.
John would be delighted to solve that problem.
When are you thinking of having a special meeting? I got a note from Julie Prescott, and I'm traveling, but I'll find a phone booth somewhere.
Somewhat depends on the staff, but I'm thinking on Monday. Is that problematic? Particularly problematic? What's best?
Well, we don't want to rush it. So
no, but I also don't want it dragging out.
I will need to be calling in, so I think just figure out what works and I'll make it adjust. If you're thinking Monday, that's fine. Okay. Monday afternoon or Tuesday morning would be actually Tuesday morning or Monday afternoon. I can make those work all
and later afternoon is better or
yeah,
horse piece doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. I'll just find a phone.
Okay, all right, we'll work that out.
If I guess if we could set a time for that special meeting, and I won't have Esther publish it until we're absolutely sure that everything's okay. Going to get done.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
This is on the unexpected finding?
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I've been recused from the case if I'm supposed to even be here or if it helps make the quorum or...
I don't know. In my opinion, if you're recused, you shouldn't have an opinion on stuff or even direct conversation in any way just because that's influencing it. Yeah. Somebody could argue it's influencing it. I'm not an attorney, though, so...
Yeah. I'll consult with Alana on that.
I think that sounds correct.
Okay.
So to Pat's point, though, of what...
Do you want to look and get back to Pat? Because I'm pretty flexible on Monday.
Well, the question, though, I guess, is this, is if we're going to do it Monday morning, what does that do different than Friday afternoon?
No, Monday morning I don't think we have to do. We could do Monday afternoon.
Okay.
Right. And I'm wide open Monday afternoon, so...
Okay, I would say then I'll get back to you on the exact time. We'll look at my travel schedule and see what
I
can find out.
Okay, look at your schedule and your agenda and then let Pat know, and we'll schedule a time.
Okay.
And you're gone all next week, pretty much.
Yeah.
So, but you're here Friday.
No.
Oh, you're gone Friday too. Okay, all right. I mean, it'd be better to have you here just because, but that's all right. We'll do it this way. Okay, anything else? All right, we are adjourned. Thank you.